This is PCJ Radio International.
Radio Berlin International.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Kenyan of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Keith Pahol. Coming up today, we talk about the telecommunications market in Burma. And then we're going to hear from a young guy who, at the age of 13, started his own radio station. We have this and much more, so stay tuned. This is Media Network Plus. We promise that we won't crash. This week, as you probably know, Burma has been in the news after the Burmese president visited Barack Obama, the American president, in Washington, D.C. In the world of telecommunications, Burma remains one of the world's last remaining untapped markets. While the mobile and online resolutions have helped spur economic and social development in most countries around the region, the lack of it in Burma is having an impact as it tries to pull itself out of years of economic stagnation. Jared Ferry has more.
Kotet hopes the bells attached to his sugarcane grinder will attract the attention of people passing by this intersection in downtown Yangon. The bells are attached to a wheel he turns, which squeezes juice out of the sugarcane stalks. He says he makes between $20 and $40 a day selling the juice. Like most people in Myanmar, Kotet's meager income doesn't allow him many luxuries, but he has been able to scrape together enough money to buy a phone and secure a SIM card, a relatively rare commodity here.
It is about $40, and the SIM card was about 200,000 chats.
That's about $230 US, a fortune for Kotet, who's paying off his SIM card in installments. Myanmar has thus far missed out on the telecommunications revolution that spurred social change and economic growth throughout the world. Telecoms experts say that Myanmar is the last remaining untapped market. Even North Korea is more connected, they say. The former military government neglected the sector, building only a skeleton network that supported a small number of subscribers. For a long time, extraordinarily high prices made mobile phones a luxury item for the rich. When they were introduced a decade ago, SIM cards sold for as much as $7,000. They gradually fell to around $200. But compared with neighboring countries, where cards cost only a couple dollars, the prices are still prohibitively high. Part of the problem is that the government companies still control the entire industry, according to Sigrid Breck.
There is only one operator with very expensive services, and of course that's the reason also why so few people can afford. So I think when you now open up with two new licenses, you will see an explosion, as you have seen in other markets.
Breck is the regional head of the Norwegian firm Telenor, which is one of the biggest telecoms companies in the world. Along with 11 other bidders, Telenor is intent on securing one of two licenses to begin operating here. It's part of the reform process Myanmar started 2 years ago. The country's new quasi-civilian government hopes a connected population will contribute to economic growth, and there's evidence that it has in other countries, according to Breck.
We asked London School of Economics to look at what is the relationship between mobile penetration and GDP growth. And we found a very close relationship. So if you're able to actually grow the mobile penetration, for every 10% you grow your GDP with 1% to 2%.
That's a significant jump for Myanmar. Decades of isolation and mismanagement by successive military regimes have left it the poorest country in Asia, except for Afghanistan. Mobile penetration is estimated to be between 4% and 8%, compared with neighboring Thailand, where people often have more than one SIM card, and penetration is more than 100%. Myanmar's government is shooting for 80% penetration by 2015. Telenor says it can roll out a network in 6 months if it wins the bid, which will be announced June 27th. In the meantime, the government has begun releasing monthly batches of $2 SIM cards, but demand far exceeds supply and the cards are being distributed through a lottery system. Kotet says he hopes to win a couple cards in the upcoming lotteries.
He's happy and he has planned to buy two more SIM cards. Yeah, he wants to give to his nephew and also his family so that he can make connections more easier. But he'll have to see whether this new SIM card has a good connection or not. If there's a good connection, he'll be very happy with it.
For Kotet, like most people in Myanmar, connecting with family members depends on luck of the draw for now.
I was just thinking a moment ago what it was like when I was in Burma a couple of years ago trying to get a stable internet connection. Let's just say a string and two styrofoam cups probably would have worked a lot better. We now move to radio. Well, a unique radio station, a radio station called Roman FM, which is part of the FCC's Part 15 law. Now, what does that mean? In the United States, the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, has something called a Part 15 station, which means a radio station can broadcast up to 100 milliwatts without a license. Now, I know many of you are thinking 100 milliwatts doesn't sound like much, but you can actually get quite far with that depending on your antenna location and the kind of antenna you have. Our guest today on the program is somebody that I came across by accident a few months ago. His name is Roman Blevins, and he started this station when he was 13 years old. That's right, 13 years old. He's now 15. Now, of course, if I hear about somebody at that age starting a radio station, we definitely need to have him on the show. My first question to him was, how did it all begin?
Well, actually, it started a couple of years ago, back in early 2010. I was just sitting around one day, and it was just one of those things that just pops into your head. The, you know, what if I could do this question? You know, what if I could, what if I can accomplish this? It started out as, you know, it's, you know, just something. I mean, like, who would think to start a radio station? That's something I had. It's just because I was interested. I loved listening to radio. Even in this modern age where we have MP3s and computers and YouTube to listen to all types of music, I still, you know, I had a little connection with radio as a special medium to myself. But and there are kids out there today who are interested in it, and it just it's been around for a long, long time. So there's, you know, really no way to, you know, kind of get rid of it right now. I think it'll be here for a long time, but.
But you've done something that I think you've really taken it to a different level. I mean, anybody can come along and say, look, I'm going to start a radio station. You create a website, you just create a stream, and that's it. But you've really taken it to another level using LPFM, which, if anybody doesn't know, that stands for low-powered FM, correct?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, yeah, I really didn't know what I was doing in the beginning. And when I started this, Keith, I was in Florida, and the FCC has two states where their laws regarding radio, that they will crack down on you with an iron fist, in New Jersey and Florida. And, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. I just had an idea, and I decided to go on eBay and look up things to start radio stations. I knew really nothing about transmitters, nothing about broadcasting. I bought a cheap Chinese hilly-made transmitter, and I got a $20 antenna that came with it, you know. And I decided, oh, cool, this will be easy. I'll just hook this up to my computer and start broadcasting, you know. And it spewed off of that. It just came all from that little idea and just doing it, just going out there and doing it.
Now, in the United States, Roman, the U.S. has, the FCC has something called Part 15, many of our listeners outside the U.S. right now won't know what that is, but Part 15 means does that really mean you're allowed to broadcast under a certain amount of power with no problem?
Well, you know, you put no problem under, like, you know, under a magnifying glass, you know, and, no problem. You can get away with it. It's just really frowned upon, and they'll try to get you for anything. I mean, yes, the law says you can do it. It has to be under, I believe it's 100 milliwatts, is what I'm, that's what I'm putting out right now. And then they can't really do anything to you. But, of course, they'll try to find things to go around their Part 15 law to get you, like, interference, saying that it interferes with airline communications, et cetera, et cetera.
I have a funny story that happened last year when I was in Plymouth Meeting in the United States for this radio conference. I actually set up at the hotel a pirate radio station, and one of the guys that was attending there was actually from the FCC, and I didn't know that, and we just started talking, and then he said he was from the FCC, and I went, oh, I shouldn't be talking too much. And he told me, he said, well, personally, he said, we don't really care as long as it doesn't cause any interference. When somebody causes interference, that's when we have to investigate.
Now, remember how I told you earlier on how I bought that cheap Chinese-made transmitter in Florida?
Right.
Well, you know something about transmitters, I guess, and you know, when you buy something cheap, and this goes for all things, you usually get what you pay for. And I had no idea about FM transmitters when I got this thing. I plugged it up, I put the antenna outside my window, and this is when I was living in an apartment. So this thing was hanging on the side of my balcony, you know, we were on the third floor, and it was been going on for a week. I've been putting music from my computer. I hadn't had a mix board yet. No microphones. I was playing music off my iTunes. And all of a sudden, you know, my neighbors started complaining. They said, well, I don't know what happened. A couple of weeks ago, you know, my TV started acting up on all channels. I called the dish people and they came and they didn't know what was going on, blah, blah, blah. And the lady was talking to my mother. And my mom told me, you know what, Roman? I think it's that little radio thing you've got going on. And it was. Every time I switched it on, their TV would go bad because it bled so bad. And now this was 15 watts of FM energy being distributed out of this transmitter. And it was affecting this whole entire neighborhood. I'm lucky that the FCC didn't come bust down my door because...
You could have used the excuse considering how bad television is. This would have been an improvement.
Lines going on the screen, colors and all. It's pretty nice looking.
Yeah. So you shut that down, but then when you left Florida, you brought the idea with you, and you're using a 100 milliwatt transmitter right now. Where did you get this transmitter from?
I had this person. He was like an electronics guy, and he was talking to me, and he told me about EDM. And about their multiple transmitters, and I was looking on their website and all like that, and he had one, so I paid him, and he sent it to me. He said it won't interfere, won't get you caught, won't get you busted. It has a 10 milliwatt to 100 milliwatt range, so you'll be fine, and it is a pure, just clean, good working transmitter, and that's what I got.
And of course, one of the interesting things that people may not be familiar with, but even if you, 100 milliwatts doesn't sound like a lot, but with a decent antenna, depending on how high the antenna is, you can get pretty good coverage with that.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. Because the antenna that I got with the Hilly was a ground plane, and it was a cheap one, and it really didn't work well. And it's all rusted now. That's how bad it is. But, I went to the Home Depot, and which is a department store in the U.S., is a hardware store, and I got some copper pipes actually, and I don't really remember. I had charts or something. Someone online sent me an email how to cut them to the specific frequency,
right,
to whatever it is, and I wanted mine kind of in the middle, so I said, all right, why don't we just cut it to the frequency of 98.9, because that way if I decided to change frequencies, I can go up to like 101 something or down probably all the way to the upper 80s, and still get away with it. Because you have to have your antenna cut a certain way on FM for it to have the best results.
So, okay, you started this off. What was the reaction from your friends? Were they looking at you going, this guy's crazy?
Yeah, well, in Florida when I started it, I was in a densely populated area of South Florida and down in Coral Springs where I lived. And there was about, in that population area, remember, I'm living next to Miami. This is a big hub right there, thousands and thousands of people. The school I went to, we had 2,500 kids. And this was a middle school. This is when I was in seventh grade. And, you know, the next day I started it, it grew. And a couple of, like a week or two later, everyone would be like, oh, are you that kid that has the radio station? Because when I was spewing the dirty 15, I like to call it, from my third floor window, I was going about 15, 16 miles. Because Florida's real flat, and the signal will just fly. And I did a range test in the car, and I kept driving and driving and driving, and I was astonished. And you, when you have that range, it's like you don't. It's like, oh no, I don't want to turn this off. I love this, but you know, you know, you don't want to get busted. But my friends, they couldn't believe it. They wanted me to prove it. So I told them, hey, when you're in the car today, turn it on. Listen. You'll hear it, you know? And some of them still were skeptics, but, you know, not all of them will believe such an amazing feat like that.
There was a funny story that we talked about 2 years ago on the show. There was some kid in, I think it was outside Ottawa in the province of Ontario in Canada, who started this pirate radio station. He was broadcasting, I think, 50 watts with a very high antenna. And he was using frequencies that were already in use by other stations in the province of Ontario, causing all this interference. And the CRTC and Industry Canada went to his location and confiscated everything. And the funny thing was, the parents just said, oh, we didn't know it was illegal. And I was like, wait a second, this is not 10 milliwatts here. This is not 100 milliwatts. This is 50. I mean, the guy was putting out the same. I mean, he was just on top of everybody else's frequency. Now, you know, my belief and my feeling is that I think it's a great idea that people could come along with micro FM stations, but don't use frequencies that are in use by other broadcasters.
Yeah, I mean that's just a common thing, you know. Like,
yeah, but you know Roman as well as I do. A lot of people don't have common sense about that.
I know. I mean, it could have been me, too. I had no idea. You know, you're just starting out. You have no knowledge about it. I had no idea that cheap transmitters didn't have a low-pass filter and wouldn't stop interference going into TVs. I had no idea. You know, I would not think about that. And that's the thing with radio, you know, the experience that you get with it, it builds on you and you learn from it as in anything else, you know.
Now, you said at the beginning you were just broadcasting music from your computer and your iPod. What about today? I mean, did you actually start doing, say, you know, programming on the station?
Yeah, it took me a little while, like a month along in it. I started doing programming, and I bought myself my first mix board, and I have it right here. I have two right now running my station. I have a and they're both from Behringer. One's a Zenix or 502. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's a small one, and it has one microphone input and two channels. And I bought that for $49.99 at the music shop because that was the only one they had. And now the big board I have in here, of course, I had to order that. But I bought the board. I bought the little board. I bought an Ultramizer Pro, also from Behringer. All my stuff is from Behringer. I really love it. And I bought a dual engine processor for my channels, and you know, I got all my stuff together and I decided I could do radio shows. You know, at first it was really bad because I had no structure and I really
yeah, but you know what, one of the things is, this is what I tell people, I said, you know, the only way you learn is by making the mistakes. Get all, you know, sound as bad as possible at the beginning because you can only improve.
That is what I did. I had no structure, and I would stutter all the time. And you know, it really helped me with my speaking skills, and it really does, because you can't go, on the radio. And at first, I did that because I didn't know how to speak like a broadcaster. But as time passes, you think about what you're going to say, and you just speak. And the thing is, I never did have stage fright or radio fear. All of my friends who wanted to go on the radio, they couldn't do it. They were afraid to speak into a microphone. But yeah, my programming was mixed. I had kids come in. We talked about just everything possible, and it didn't really start gaining ground until later on.
Now, with what you're doing, are there others in the United States doing the same thing?
There are to a certain degree. It's just there are pirate stations. Like, and I don't really like to refer to myself as that because I'm really not. You know, I'm still under the Part 15 thing. But you know, there's other micro stations around. But they don't focus on, you know, like a real FM station format. They just like to broadcast to the community, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's great. People getting involved in FM, you know, and taking part of radio. But, I guess there's a couple who try to, do FM like I do. But, I mean, I haven't seen anything else kind of the thing that I do. You know, I if you look at my station in comparison to other commercial stations, they are practically the same. However, mine's better though, and I just wish I had the capacity to broadcast on a 100,000 watt transmitter, you know, and have a huge tower and all, because other than that, my programming is the same. It sounds amazing on the radio and stuff like that, you know.
So how old were you when you started, and how old are you now?
I'm 15 right now. I just turned 15, and I started back in 2010, and, you know, and all that time in between, you know.
Wait a second. You're 15 now, and you started this in when you were 13. That's extraordinary. I mean, I can't think of any other 13-year-olds that would come along and say, oh, I'm going to start this off.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people who talk to me and who meet me in real life, they actually think that I'm probably a freshman in college. I've actually walked into a bar, well, it was like a bar and grill with my family multiple times, and we would see this. I want to put my glasses on. I wear contacts, but when I put my glasses on, it makes me look older than I am. You know, and I go up, you know, and we try this, and the lady said, "Can I get you anything?" And I'm like,
"Scotch, you know, and soda, right?"
give me a strawberry daiquiri, extra virgin. But it's the way I conduct myself, I guess. That's what everyone says. They would never expect that I was 15, and especially when I was 13, they're still astonished to find out how old I was when, because I guess, you know, I didn't really change much from then to here, but progressed in a good way.
You know, I have this feeling. And this is, I could be wrong here, but I don't think I will be. I have a feeling that you're going to be one of these guys, like myself and others, who started off at a very young age and will continue doing this until our dying day.
With most people in this field that I've seen, like, once they get involved in this, they can't stop. You know, it's like, you gotta keep doing it, and I guess you're right. We'll just have to see where the future takes me. It all depends, you know, because you know, I find this as a fun talent, broadcasting in general of mine, and I really enjoy it, and it's something I'm really good at.
And I was speaking there with Roman Blevins, who created Roman FM. If you want to find out more on the radio station, you can check out our Facebook page, which Roman is a member of. So if you have any questions for him and want to speak to him directly, go right there and chat away. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
This is PCJ Radio International.
It's 13 hours UTC.
I'm Andy Sennett.
I'm coming up on this week's Focus Asia Pacific,
breaking the business model of people smuggling,
questions over legal fairness in Burma,
and new film confronts the issue of violence against women in India.
Well, that was the start of PCJ Radio International's first transmission from the Trincomalee site in Sri Lanka, targeting Southeast Asia and East Asia on 11750 kilohertz. That was recorded on May the 13th. The other transmissions that we have coming up, of course, are this Sunday, May 26th, from 13 to 14 hours UTC, from 13 to 14 hours UTC, on 11750 kilohertz. The program begins with Focus Asia Pacific, presented by Andy Sennett, and a special edition of Happy Station that will follow. To find out more details, visit our website, at www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. And we've already started sending out QSO cards for those who verified the reception and have been helping out with the reception, because next week we might change frequency because of some co-channel interference issues that we've had with Radio Havana Cuba in certain parts of the world, namely Australia and the west coast of North America. But you can find all the details at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. Now, to find out what reception is going to be like for this transmission, as well as the rest of the week, here's our propagation editor, Dan Hensley.
Here's propagation for the week from May 25th to May 31st, 2013. The 10.7 centimeter flex starts off at 120 on May 25th, 115 on May 26th, May 27th, 110, May 28th and 29th, 105, May 30th and 31st, 100. The A index is 5 from May 25th to May 27th, on May 28th spiking at 15, down to 10 on May 29th, an A index of 5 on May 30th and 31st. The KP index is 2 for the first 3 days of this week, from May 25th to May 27th, spiking at 4 on May 28th, down to 3 on May 29th, and then 2 on May 30th and 31st. 5 sunspots are passing out of view this week, 17, 44, 45, 46, 47, and 50. 1 sunspot remains this week, and that's 1748 with the Delta Class magnetic field that harbors energy for X-class flares. On May 20th, we had an M1 class flare from 1748. We'll see a solar wind from coronal hole on the sun's south-southwest region hit Earth on May 23rd and 24th. Auroras over North America are possible, so get ready to possibly work some FM, VHF, and UHF DX. Back to you, Keith.
All right, thanks, Dan. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. If you'd like to contact us to let us know what you think of the program or have any story ideas, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. So on behalf of Dan Hensley and Paulette McCrory, who's away this week, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, hoping to see you all again very soon. 73 and 88 to the ladies.